Snappy, Snoop, snorkeling for a snarge. Welcome to Good Job Brain. Don't think about it. Your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 79. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And we are your sparkling, sparky, sparring Spartans and spare ribs.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
And this episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one online platform that makes it fast and easy to create websites, whether if that's for personal or professional uses. You can do blogs, you can do portfolios, you can do online stores, you can do stuff for your small business. Very awesome and very easy to use and very beautiful. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/goodjobbrain and use the offer code SNARG. All right, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. And here I picked a random card, a Trivial Pursuit card from the box. Get your barnyard buzzers ready. Here we go.
All right.
Blue Wedge for geography. What breakfast food is called?
I love when she gets angry at the question.
Yeah. No. I just can't pronounce it.
Oh.
All right.
What breakfast food is called Pfannkuchen in southern Germany, Pannekoek in, oh great, I gave it away, South Africa, and Puda in India? Colin.
Would that be pancakes?
Yes. Yeah. Pannekoek.
It's one of my favorite Spanish words.
What is it in Spanish?
Panqueque. I just like saying that.
Panqueque?
Yeah.
Kilolo?
Yeah.
Pink Wedge for pop culture. Whoa! Which actor did not appear in Saving Private Ryan? Here's a list of four actors. Edward Burns, Ted Danson, Vin Diesel, or Ralph Fiennes?
Oh my gosh.
Colin.
I'm going to guess Ralph Fiennes.
Correct! Would guess Vin Diesel.
I remember that. I knew that one just as a bit of trivia, that he was really young in that one. Yeah.
I knew he was in it because I liked Vin Diesel at that time.
He was the voice of the Iron Giant. All right. Yellow Wedge. What cylindrical food container was so prized by its inventor that he requested his ashes be interred in one?
Must be the thermos.
Incorrect.
Oh, really?
Food container, not liquid container.
Tupperware?
Incorrect.
But it's not necessarily cylindrical.
It is
food container.
A brand name food. Dana.
Pringles.
Yes.
Really?
Pringles can.
Oh, what a mean surprise.
What if you're like, oh, cool, mom left a some can Pringles. Of Pringles in the kitchen.
It's right in the living room next to the TV.
Yuck. All right, Purple Wedge. On what Shakespearean play did Stephanie Meyer loosely base New Moon, the second book of the Twilight series? Dana, very excitedly.
Romeo and Juliet?
Correct.
It was.
No one's ever going to notice these parallels.
It was really, really, really overt. Really overt.
All right, Green Wedge for science. Which of these describes when a whale pokes his head out of the water to take a look around? Splurming.
Ooh, I wish.
Tipping or spy hopping?
Wow.
This is to take a look around.
I hope it's splurming.
I'm going to guess tipping.
Spy hopping.
Data's right. It is spy hopping.
Take a look around. There's why. But splurming would be better.
Splurming is a word, but it's a word on Urban Dictionary.
Okay. That's probably
okay,
not.
So
upset about that.
Wait. No,
it's the act of spitting out one's drink or food due to shock or surprise. What?
Like a spit take.
Do they just make
splurming?
Urban Dictionary. It's such a questionable source.
It is. Anyways, well, all right, last question, Orange Wedge. What tongue-in-cheek sport got its start when Phil Shaw combined pressing his shirts with rock climbing?
Isn't like the World Championships of Ironing or something
like that? Oh my god, it's extreme ironing.
Yeah.
What?
So it's like, I've seen this on like the Wacky Sport. It's like guys, they'll go out in just some tiny little rock in the middle of the ocean with high winds, and it's like you try and iron in just crazy spots where okay. it's
oh, you're
where
actually
it's
ironing
not, yeah,
his shirt.
Yeah, actually iron board, iron shirt, and you know they're just being whipped by winds and water and things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say tongue in cheek is the an accurate description. Yes.
Well. Good job, Brins. Good job, cool. Collins Brins. Extreme ironing. There you go.
They had to have something for the sports category.
This week's topic is suggested by Chris.
I was thinking about people overdoing things and suggested that the topic should be too much.
Mm.
Like, too much.
Well, like just, oh, you overdone it. Now you've done it
too much
to
of
yourself.
A good thing.
Yeah, too much yeah. of a good thing or a bad thing or whatever. Just too much of anything. Is it too much to ask you? So actually, to be totally honest, it was because I was reading about this particular topic that I suggested the general, uh-huh. the generalized topic.
I had a feeling it was something like that.
That's basically what
it's
it was.
It's like, I just
yeah.
need an opportunity to talk about this thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so it's like, well, what is the more generalized version of this? I was just reading about semantic satiation. Semantic satiation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ow.
It is not as crazy as you think it is. We've all experienced it. It is the phenomenon where if you read or hear or write a word multiple times, eventually it loses all meaning.
Yes!
Like it sounds yeah. really weird. That's a
yeah.
thing.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a thing. It's
and
called
you're like,
semantic
I can't believe
satiation.
We use this as a word.
Right,
like,
right,
is
right.
Is that a word? Yeah.
Like if you say the word yogurt over and over and over again.
Yeah,
like eventually
or you stare at this. For me, it's staring at a screen or you keep typing it or it's visually being repeated.
Or if you just keep writing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like existential trance. Like, what are letters?
Right. Where does meaning come from?
Yeah. So this has actually been shown, like, in a laboratory setting over and over from at least the beginning of the 20th century, if not even in earlier studies. This is a real phenomenon. And the big question is, is it just like sensory overload? Like, are you just seeing the same thing so much that your brain isn't taking in the sensation of it anymore? Mm. Or is it actually like a problem with semantics, like the meaning of the word? Are you actually becoming unable in your brain to understand the meaning of the word? Like, because that's what it feels like, right? It's like it starts to feel like a glob of letters or a glob of sounds and not a sign with meaning.
That's true.
Attached. So the current research and everything I've read says we don't really know for sure yet. But the current research seems to suggest that it really is a semantic problem because our brain takes that and it translates for us that it's a word with a meaning, right? Like that's how we get from looking at a series of squiggles on a piece of paper to understanding the concept of like dog. So what actually is occurring in the brain when you do it repeatedly? I am not going to take a stab at that because the last time I tried talking about the human brain on this podcast, an actual brain doctor scientist wrote in to say I got it all wrong. So I'm going to dumb it down as much as I possibly can to indicate that I'm not trying to be specific. Our thinky meat gets tired. It just stuff keeps happening and it like kind of wears itself out a little bit and that connection that is made up there in the old noggin like just stops kind of firing because it's tired. It needs like a refractory period. Like it needs some time to
recoup.
But I think I can understand this. So how did scientists figure out that it's a semantic issue? So there is a Washington University study from 1997 that keeps getting cited. They show you cards that say, after they've like repeated like the word dog, you know, a bunch of times to you, and they think that you should be satiated, semantically satiated, then they show you cards that say dog and cat or dog and chair. Then they say, hey, which of these pairs of words is related? And they have found, many studies have found, that if you're satiated, if they've said the word dog enough times or shown you the word dog enough times or, you know, made you write it or whatever it is, your response time goes up. Yeah. It takes you longer to realize, you know, in a matter of like millisecond, it doesn't take you like 5 minutes, but it takes you a little bit longer to go, oh, dog and cat are related, not dog and chair. And then they've done this with rhyming words or words that are spelled the same but don't rhyme. So like they'll show you like the words same and claim and then the words same and dime. And they'll just show you those words and say, okay, which pair rhymes?
Oh.
And there is no change to the response time if they've satiated you in one of those words.
It has nothing to do with meaning.
It has to do with the reading of the words. So there is a change in response time only when they're asking you a question about the meaning.
That's so clever. Because I was thinking to myself, like, how do they control that it's a meaning issue? And that's
so it, that is exactly what they do. And they say these phenomena in general also are what is known as jamais vu, which is the opposite of déjà vu. Déjà vu is French for already seen. Jamais vu, never seen. You're doing something familiar, but it all feels unfamiliar. But don't worry, you're not crazy. It is a real thing.
Well, at least you
might
in that
be.
Way.
You might be crazy. Well, but it is also a real thing.
This is not the reason you are
you
crazy.
You feel your brain just kind of letting go of words. You're like, oh, no.
Come back, brain.
I love doing the show because it makes me think like, oh, it's I'm not the only one. Yeah. Right, I'm not right, the right, only yeah. one. Yeah.
I have a quick quiz about too much of a good thing.
Depending on one point
just too
of
much.
View.
I have
just
a quiz to... about too much. I was like getting very relativistic. Who was afflicted with the golden touch? Karen.
That is King Midas.
King Midas. Which Greek god gifted / afflicted him with this ability?
Oh, jeez.
Who's a jerk? Zeus.
Zeus is always jerks. Kind of a jerk.
What do you think, Chris?
I'll go with Zeus.
No. Who is the god of indulgence and fancy things?
Bacchus or Dionysus.
Yeah. Melanie Griffith fell in love with her co-star on the set of their 1995 movie Too Much and married him a year later.
Antonio Banderas.
That's the correct pronunciation as well. This filmmaker and actor's long-lost film, Too Much Johnson, was recently rediscovered.
He
shot it 2 years before coming to Hollywood to make his 1941 classic, which won the Academy Award for Best Writing that year.
Before coming to Hollywood, 1941.
Academy Award for Best Writing.
Susan Cain?
Best Writing. Or Hitchcock, maybe?
Oh, that's a good guess.
Okay.
I'll guess it. Alfred Hitchcock.
No.
Oh, okay. Damn it, Colin.
You were on the right track before.
So Orson Welles?
Yes. Orson Welles?
Orson Welles.
Okay. I thought that started earlier than that. Okay. Yeah.
They just found his new movie, Too Much Johnson.
Is it complete? I mean, it's a complete movie.
I think so.
Just hold back.
It's a fact, you guys.
These are facts in the world.
If you were diagnosed with hemochromatosis, you'd have too much what in your blood?
Hemochromatosis.
Blood color.
Too much, yeah.
Too many red blood cells?
No.
See, I was saying too much color. Close. That's not a bad day. Chromatosis. Too much.
Too much.
Melanin.
Iron.
Oh. I would think it's like hyperferro.
How about hyperkalemia? Is too much something else in your blood?
Kalemia.
Think about the periodic table.
Calcium?
Chlorine.
No.
C-O.
It begins with a K.
Potassium.
According to WebMD, what is the threshold for too much cholesterol or high cholesterol?
That's a good trivia question. I don't even know where to start.
Just as a healthy person,
on a Cheerios box?
I don't know.
It's like 40.
80?
40. Just pick I'm not going to give a unit. I'm just going to say 40.
You're almost ish, right? 240. 240. There is a 40 in the number.
Thanks for being kind, but I was not.
But you're 200. When they were asked why they broke up with their last girlfriend, 40% of men said these exact three words. What are they? What are the three words?
She's too much.
No.
Too much nagging.
Close.
Talks too much?
Nope. Too much baggage.
Really? Yeah. 40% of people said too much baggage?
Yeah. You guys have just been with like baggageless ladies.
Guess so.
Yeah. Last question. This 1956 Alfred Hitchcock film starring Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day was a remake of a film that Alfred Hitchcock also released in 1936.
Wasn't that The Man Who Knew Too Much?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Nice.
He did it twice.
Yeah.
So nice. He did it twice.
Well, he made the same movie twice?
Yeah. He said the first
different
one...
Different people?
Different actors. One was 1936, and then the second one was 1950.
That is weird. Yeah. Well, I guess like we're pumping out the same movies now, so remaking stuff.
Yeah, it's funny.
A remake.
Well, he said the first one was the work of a talented amateur, and the second one is the work of a professional. So
he can get away with that.
I could see, like, you find a project you really like, and you do it, and you're like, I didn't do a very good job. And then when you're better, you're like, I'll do a better job now.
Yeah, well, the later one, I think, is definitely the more famous one. And I had seen that growing up. And then one time I was flipping through the channels, and it's like, oh, The Man Who Knew Too Much, Alfred Hitchcock. And I was watching it, and like, classic movie or something. I'm like, this isn't the same movie I remember, but it's Hitchcock. And that's, yeah, I mean,
so
I...
Am I in crazy town?
Yeah. I must have really misremembered it when I saw it before. Yeah.
Am I taking crazy pills?
Good job, you guys.
Lots of old wives' tales out there, or things that your parents would tell you. Like, one of the things my mom loved to tell me was, like, don't eat too much watermelon because you might accidentally eat a seed and then a watermelon is going to grow in your stomach. Yeah. And I was just like, no, that's not possible. Another one is like...
They just wanted you to stop eating all the watermelon. They were out of like other ways to... Yeah.
Another one is like, don't eat too many carrots because you'll turn orange and you'll look like a Oompa Loompa. So I looked into that. The carrot one.
Yeah.
It is true.
It is true.
Yeah. If you eat too many carrots or yams or pumpkins or any vegetable that has a lot of carotenoids, you will turn orange. You'll turn yellow.
Yeah.
And it happens in babies too, because you know a lot of baby food has those types of
carrots.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you can tell, and it's not like your whole body. It's the palm of your hands. It's the corners of your nose.
Is it
just
harmful?
Different parts. It is harmless.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong.
Great.
Nothing's
feeding,
wrong.
But people might make fun of your baby.
Tons of carrots. Yeah.
Resume plan.
Yellow baby. Project yellow.
They will
Project
see in the
baby.
Dark. Like,
I was looking at this, and it's called hyperkeratinemia, otherwise known as keratinosis.
Mm-hmm.
Harmless effect. And then this made me look into carrots in general, eating too many carrots. And of course, we talked a bit about carrots and eyesight on the show before, but this blew my mind. So we grew up our whole lives, you know, being taught that eating carrots will improve your vision, or it's good for your eyes, or, you know, it has something that will make your vision better at night, or it's partially true. There are vitamins and other things in carrots that be beneficial, but I mean, the amount you have to eat is a lot.
Right.
You would definitely be yellow.
But I mean, this applies to other things, right? These compounds, other vegetables also have these compounds. How come we're not hearing, you should eat pumpkin, your eyes will be good. You know, why is it carrots?
Right.
Why carrots? And it is all part of propaganda.
New in the carrot cartel.
I'm not kidding. Okay.
Big carrot.
Yeah.
Like many things, this started during wartime era. In World War II, in England, you know, the British government issued citywide blackouts during World War II, right? This is so that for German airplanes, you know, flying around, they can't really see where they're bombing because there are no lights. The British Royal Air Force were able to kind of repel the German fighters because they had a new secret weapon, and that is radar technology. They had radar, the onboard airborne interception radar was first used by the British pilots. And they can pinpoint enemy bombers before they even reach the English Channel. But they didn't want to tell people that. They don't want to make it known that they have this.
Right.
So they developed this crazy story.
Really?
This theory that, well, we feed our pilots a lot of carrots and it improves their night vision. I am not kidding. Like,
really?
I found a lot of historical art.
The Nazis just bought it.
And they
line
did.
And sinker.
They did. Other armies and other
massive
air forces.
German carrot fields being
carrots played a very big part in World War II because of this. They even had posters, like propaganda posters, like eat carrots, it's good for your vision, and they have different characters, you know, like Mr. Carrot or Dr. Carrot,
right? Because they had to really devote themselves to the story.
And like I said, I wouldn't say it's completely a myth because there are very good nutrients in carrots, but like not
it's
to this degree.
A grain of truth. There's
a grain.
They're not bad for your eyesight.
No. Some of the Germans were like, oh, they're eating carrots. We got to eat carrots too. And it's just this feedback loop. And this is where the whole carrots are good for your eyes came from.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. From the Brits. And there must, I would have to imagine that there's some effect too of like, oh yeah, it works. You know, like, oh, they're sure. Like, oh, I'm eating these. Oh, I see so much better since I've been eating these carrots.
Yeah. But I mean, the good thing is they're really kind of promoting a healthy lifestyle too.
Huh.
Makes me a little disillusioned with everything. But like, what?
I don't know what vegetables to believe in anymore.
You should not eat too many apple seeds. You really shouldn't eat apple seeds at all, or cherry seeds, because they actually do contain trace amounts of cyanide.
Trace amounts.
Like, if
but if you eat a giant barrel full of apple seeds,
which you should not do,
you probably will get sick. If you eat a giant barrel full of
like, who eat, like, is, has this been a problem? Like, who just eats a lot of apple seeds?
Well, cider. I mean, if they're making byproducts of apple, like applesauce back in the olden days, they probably have to just mash up the whole apple.
So, Karen, mentioning old wives' tales, don't sit too close to the TV. You're going to ruin your eyesight.
Is that true or not?
Unfortunate to say, it is most likely true.
Yes.
It is most likely true that what they call near work, you know, being close to something and focusing your eyes on something that's really up close to you really does, they think, contribute to nearsightedness, or myopia is the technical name, as you guys probably know. But it's not just TV. You're keeping with the spirit of too much of a good thing, too much of a bad thing, too much reading.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
They really do. Mm-hmm. A lot of researchers really do believe that literacy and reading just culturally contributes to higher rates of myopia and nearsightedness. Rates of myopia are tied with higher IQ. Rates of myopia are tied with higher academic achievement.
Oh.
Rates of myopia are higher in industrialized nations. Rates of myopia are higher in nations that tend to be richer. And now, of course, it's sociology and humans. There's a lot of factors at play here.
Well, hold on. Does everybody wear glasses or need a prescription at this table? I do.
No.
Oh.
Chris does
not. Lucky you. Nope. I just got computer glasses, in fact.
It's not a coincidence. We talk about the stereotypical nerd image, and, you know, there's, you know, however you describe, what is nerd to you?
Put some glasses on.
Yeah, throw some glasses, you know, especially if you're an art director. Yeah. Or if you're casting for TV. Oh, how do we know he's a nerd? Put some glasses on him. And it really does seem to be the case that the nerd, you know, very, very broadly speaking, the nerdier you are as a person or as a culture, the higher rate of nearsightedness and myopia there is. Now, definitely, yeah, there is some genetics that's part of it. Some people are predisposed to nearsightedness, and, you know, you can see it. Even just, you may know families where everyone in the family has glasses. And that's part of it. Nutrition is part of it. Physiology is part of it. But the research really seems to show that becoming an industrialized society, moving away from agrarian or hunter-gatherer society, you are setting your culture on a path for higher
bad
rates of nearsightedness. Yeah. So if you were going to test this, how would we go about testing it? They've done some ingenious tests on this over the years, sociological tests. So the first big test that they did of this was in the late 60s, and they studied a population of Eskimos, Native Eskimos, in Barrow, Alaska. And one of the reasons that they picked this population was they really wanted to look at a population that had industrialized or become more westernized very quickly, such that over the course of just a few generations, you know, the grandkids are going to be really different from the grandparents in terms of how they grew up. The studies they found were amazing. So they studied three generations of families, grandparents, parents, younger children. There was zero rate of myopia, basically, in the grandparents' generations.
Okay.
In parents 30 and up, there was a rate of around 8%. In their children, there was a rate of 59%.
Wow.
And so now these are not just self-reported, like, oh, how well do you feel you can read? I mean, they had a panel of optometrists and ophthalmologists really looking at the shape of their eyes.
Oh.
And you can tell by, you know, obviously external means whether someone has nearsightedness or not. And their conclusions were that the way the grandparents grew up, you know, which was much different than their children and even further different from their children, they weren't in formalized schooling as much. They weren't reading as much. They weren't doing near work indoors. They were out. They were doing a lot of non-reading
fishing,
based work.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, it makes sense. I mean, they point out sort of their hypothesis going into it, or one of the hypotheses was, as a species, being able to see far is going to really select a lot better for your survival out in the wild. Whether you're hunting animals as a team, even if you're just gathering berries and fruits and things, being able to spot things at a distance, if you're in a pre-literate, you know, society, it doesn't matter if you can do sewing or needlework or typing or texting or any of those kind of things. It's really fascinating to think of, like, well, this is sort of the trade-off we get for being able to read. I mean, it's, we can do a lot more as a culture, but yeah, we have to wear glasses a little bit more and we have to wear contact lenses
also,
a little bit more.
Also, our work is now near work. I mean, most people have near work now. We're not out looking out at sea.
Absolutely.
Trying to spot another ship. Or
absolutely.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, most of us, or many, many more of us every year work on computers or writing. It's pretty rare to find occupations these days where being able to see far is part of the job requirements. Mm-hmm. You know, like Air Force pilots are one example where if you have, you know, corrected vision the way like I have, versus I couldn't be an Air Force pilot. Yeah. That's the only thing keeping me from being an Air Force pilot.
Okay. I was wondering.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Salutations! I am Professor Barnaby Whitcomb, and I'm here to tell you my amazing and perhaps unbelievable discovery. For years now, I've been tracking down a certain creature that, I believe, has the ability to travel through time and space. This specimen is of the species Castor canadensis, or rather, the North American beaver. Yes, I have been combing through historic documents and photographs, and have evidence that suggests that this time-traveling beaver exists. I have crafted a website that features the array of my photographic proof of the time-travel beaver. Since I am a very busy science man, I rely on Squarespace for all of my website-making needs. Fast, easy, and visually stimulating, even for someone who is not at all experienced with the World Wide Web. I am not a coder nor a designer, but I was able to create my Time Travel Beaver resource website with its own domain in less than an hour. To be exact, I was able to get my website set up in 14 minutes. You can review my beaver findings at www.timetravelbeaver.com to find out more about this majestic and mysterious creature. To create your own website, head over to squarespace.com/goodjobbrain for a free trial and see how easy it is.
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about things that are just too much.
So Nintendo's new video game system, the Wii U, is not doing too well in terms of sales. But but this might be surprising to you
because the Wii did so well.
The Wii did so well. It was the hottest in the year 2007, 2008, 2009. It was like the hottest Christmas present. It sold better than any other video game system ever. It was amazing. And in fact, in the year 2007, it was just such a hot ticket item that a radio station in Sacramento, California, KDND, came up with a pretty funny contest, the sort of thing we might come up with here on Good Job Brain, because we like bodily functions.
And it was and puns.
And puns.
And video games.
Exactly. It was the trifecta for sure. Yeah. The total hat trick of cute contest ideas. Hold your Wii for a Wii.
Oh.
They acquired a Nintendo Wii, and they told their listeners, you know, come down, you sign up for this contest, you come to the station, and you're gonna drink bottles of water. And after while you're drinking these bottles of water, you can't go to the bathroom. And the person who holds out the longest without peeing wins the Nintendo Wii. What a funny contest idea! So so they made them. The listeners came into the station and they were on the air on the radio. Basically, had them drink an eight ounce bottle of water every 15 minutes. Every 15 minutes, it was lots and lots of water, and they really had to pee. And again, you know, cute contest idea, except for the fact that what they were doing was actually extremely dangerous. Really, really, really dangerous. By drinking a lot of water. So I'm going to call back to earlier episodes. We talked about the Renaissance physician Paracelsus, I believe, on a couple of different episodes of Good Job Brain. Real key figure in early medicine. And he said this. He said it in German, but I'll say it in English.
Thank you.
Sure. All things are poison, and nothing is without poison. Only the dose permits something not to be poisonous. Or, as they tend to shorten it these days, the dose makes the poison. Mm. Everything is a poison, and everything is not a poison. It's all about how much of it did you ingest. Mm. In this case, yes, even water, fresh, clean, delicious water, is poisonous to the body in high enough doses. So why is that? This is really interesting. Electrolytes. Everybody knows, Everybody heard the word electrolytes.
Plants
electrolytes.
Love them.
Plants love them.
Gatorade.
Plants crave. Oh, Gatorade. Yeah. Your electrolytes. You replenish your electrolytes. They are positively charged ions of certain elements. So most importantly, there are other ones, but sodium. Sodium is really important to have in the body. Our body cannot make sodium. We have no way of making it. So we, our body does many wonderful things, but it cannot make sodium, and we must have sodium in our body in a certain balance all the time, or we die. Our body uses positive sodium ions and positive potassium ions in the brain. Mm. Like, you know how our brain has electrical charges?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how it manages all that, by like passing positively charged sodium potassium ions like back and forth.
You can only get sodium if you ingest it.
You have to ingest
it. That's right.
Okay. Or
and the thing is, you can get as much sodium as you need from like just, you know, eating foods and whatever. You need a balance, and our bodies have an incredible regulatory system for making sure that we are in balance, and it is called pee. Peeing, as it turns out, is not just for fun. Like, I'm sure there's not a person at this table that does not, you know, enjoy just the highlight of the day. You have to pee that water out. So it's not just like, I drank so much water and now I'm uncomfortable, and now to make myself more comfortable, I'm going to pee. It's like, your body is doing that because it must restore the balance of the electrolytes and the water all in your system. Now, again, children listen to this podcast. Don't get scared. Don't tell your parents that you can't drink another cup of water because you might get water poisoning. It's not going to happen. Like, it's actually very, very rare that people get water poisoning or water intoxication.
You have to fight your natural response.
Yeah.
I just did a couple of races and half marathons last weekend, and in the medical tents, as you're running by, they actually have packets of salt that people would just grab and just pour it in their mouth.
Yeah.
Because you're sweating so much, you're getting rid of all the sodium. You're like, I need sodium in my body.
You sweat, all the sodium comes out, right? And then if you just drink water, you're not replenishing the electrolytes, you're losing them. And that's if people collapse, you know, like when they're racing, like, you know, they
most likely tend
to suspect that they don't have enough electrolytes. I mean, it affects your brain, and it works real fast if you don't. So what actually happened at this radio station was that one of the contestants was a woman named Jennifer Strange, mother of three, wanted to win a Wii for her children.
Aww.
So she competed. I know, it's very sad. She competed in this contest. And during the radio broadcast, because they said on the air, like, we're having them do this, and then the radio hosts joked with each other, like, no, this sounds kind of dangerous. Yeah, well, they signed a release, so they understand that there's danger.
They didn't know how much danger, though.
A nurse called in, a pediatric nurse called the station and was like, I just want to let you guys know that what you are doing is very dangerous, and they can die of water intoxication, possibly, so you should not do this. So Jennifer Strange lasted until second place. She actually was already getting a headache. She was just like, I don't feel so good. And they said, well, if you quit now, we'll give you Justin Timberlake tickets for tonight, and then the other person will get the Wii. And she's like, okay, all right, I'm going to quit now, and I'll take the Timberlake tickets. She's like, okay. So she goes to the bathroom, but she still has a splitting headache. She calls a friend to say, I feel really bad. I have a splitting headache. I'm going to go home and lay down. And she goes home, and she lays down, and she dies because of water intoxication. That's why she had a splitting headache, because her brain was swelling. The area around it was swelling, giving her a horrible headache. Yeah. So, again, like, very, very, very rare for somebody to die of water poisoning. You know, remember to replenish electrolytes. Do not ever, ever, ever do a contest where you have to hold your pee in.
If you have to go pee, go pee.
Just go pee. I also have some body-related too much of a good thing. So, actually, I was inspired because I went racing last weekend, and this dude, it was during my half marathon, I saw this guy, and I'm looking at him, I was like, something's kind of weird. He looks injured because on the front of his shirt, There is a trail, a vertical trail of blood or a red streak on one side of his body. And I was like, that's weird. What's that? Oh my God, his nipple is bleeding.
Whoa.
So this, it's bad, but it's not that. it's not a rare occurrence, especially with males who do long distance running. The friction of the shirt and the sweat. Chafe. And it makes the nipple raw, and it just as you're running, you'll just start bleeding. And what can you do? Like, I guess you can bandage it. I mean, a lot of people put Vaseline or some sort of lubricant or tape around it. But if you're not,
I would just cut out the little circle of fabric around my nipple. Just run. I'll
get you're like, oh, it's so airy.
I'll get a crazy suntan, but.
Now I'm thinking of you in a nipple
toasty
shirt.
Brown nipples.
You know, exercise is good. When you do too much of it or you don't take care of yourself, you would get this malady, which is called a jogger's nipple.
Why do they call it that?
It's either a sports injury or a drink at a bar. It's like, y'all have a jogger's nipple? It's like it Gatorade and whiskey or something.
Oh, man.
Official drink.
And grenadine. It's vodka, Gatorade, and grenadine.
Right.
The jogger's nipple.
Thanks. Fantastic. That's great.
And you get your electrolytes, too. Fantastic.
We just invented a drink.
So I also looked up other funny name maladies because of you're doing too much of something. Of course, we probably all heard of the Nintendo thumb.
Yes. Nintendo thumb.
Which is a repetitive strain injury. Yes. Mm-hmm. Having your thumbs on the D-pad, you can probably lose feeling, but temporary.
We know all about that one. Yep.
I didn't know this one. Surfer's ear, which is different than swimmer's ear. Surfer's ear, this sounds bonkers. It's an abnormal bone growth within the ear canal.
Whoa.
It's caused by cold wind and exposure to water and seawater, and somehow it can develop lumps.
We have a friend who is a listener of the show as well, and he suffers from surfer's ear, and it is actually very painful. He said he's had to have procedures where they go in and basically have to file it down to kind of ream it out.
Is it from surfing?
Yes, it is. It's from surfing and just a life that he spends a lot of time in the ocean and around the water, and it doesn't sound pleasant.
No.
It's too bad it hurts, because it seems like he's about to become a fish, you know? Like if he just keeps
growing extra bones because all the time he spends.
There's a bunch of musical maladies as well. Fiddler's neck and flautist chin.
I can see
chafing or having something against your skin.
Yeah.
Fiddler's neck is one side of your neck because your chin rest is there, or the flautist chin is like because your chin keeps touching the metal.
Yeah.
And this is a weird one I'm going to end the segment with. It's called a Jeep seat or Jeep rider's disease. And this condition was very widespread in the American army during World War II. More than 80,000 soldiers actually had to be hospitalized. Basically it's exactly what it sounds like. They've been sitting in a Jeep for a really long time.
So it's like saddle sores.
And you're just jostling up and down.
Right, not paved roads.
I'm not really sure how do you pronounce this. I've seen this word before. Coccyx?
Yeah, that's right.
Your tailbone,
right? Yeah.
I mean, this can get bad. They can get really bad, and your butt crack is injured.
Sorry. You can't injure the butt crack. Butt crack is the absence of butt.
It's butt crack adjacent.
It goes right to there.
Yeah, it goes right to there.
Huh.
Don't look it up.
Please. Are there photographs?
Really? Don't look it up.
Well, I really want to look it up.
Now you made me want to look it up.
This is not like, gross animals and stuff. You know, medical stuff is a whole different.
Yeah, it is different.
Eh? Yeah. Mm. And a lot of stitches, and we just don't.
Okay.
Just don't.
Unless you want to see some hot soldier butts. Just kidding.
They're hot because they're inflamed.
Inflamed, swollen.
And we have one last Too Much segment. I know it's a music round, Colin, but that's all I know.
Yes.
That is all I know.
Yes. Well,
I'm thinking song titles with Too Much, but I was like, I can only think of like two songs. I don't know what it is.
So you're right. All of the songs that I will play for you have the words Too Much in the title. Somewhere in the title. So all the artists that I'm about to play for you are famous people. They're famous recording artists. Okay. But the songs may or may not be very famous songs by there.
Sure.
So I will play the songs and you guys give me the artists. Remember, Too Much in all of the titles. Here we go. First song.
Well, honey, I love too much. I need your love too much. Who want the thrill of your touch? Well, gee, I can't love you.
Karen.
Elvis Presley.
It is Elvis Presley. Too Much.
Yeah. Elvis Pelvis.
Yeah, not trying to fool you too hard on that one. All right, here we go. Next one. Karen again.
Dave Matthews Band.
That is the Dave Matthews Band.
Too Much.
Too Much.
Yes.
Yes.
Da, da, da. Oh, seventh grade was awesome.
All right, okay. We're going to bring it down a little bit. For some reason, I turned up a lot of ballads in assembling this quiz. So here we go. We're going to go a little slow for this one.
I'm just the pieces of the man I used to be. Too many bitter tears are raining down on me.
Dana.
Is that Queen?
It is Queen.
Oh.
Yeah, as soon as he hit the bitter tears, you're like, oh, yeah.
It's like Freddie Mercury.
Yes, that is Queen. Too Much Love Will Kill You.
Whoa.
Which I've heard is true, by the way. Yeah, yeah. Here we go. Next one.
It's like a Chris song. It's like Carole King or something.
One day I'm gonna understand the way that my heart works, and then I'm gonna work it out.
Dana and Karen, not far behind. Yeah. Dana.
Is this Joni Mitchell?
Yeah.
No.
No.
It's not Joni Mitchell.
Okay. Who is Joan Baez?
No. Oh, no. Karen, you're going to hate yourself. Chris.
Is it Carole King?
It is Carole King. It is Carole King. Too Much Rain.
Before this song began.
I was joking. I was like, this is a Chris song.
It's going to be Carole King.
And it was.
I was excited because it was like, Karen's psychic.
That was Too Much Rain, Carole King. All right, here we go. Here's a little more recent one.
It's Jason Mraz.
It is Jason Mraz.
Yeah.
You know the song name?
Too Much something.
Too Much Food.
Too Much Food, okay.
Yes, Jason Mraz. All right, moving right along.
I don't want nobody else to ever love me. You are my shining star, my guiding light, my love fantasy. There's not a minute, hour, day, or night that I don't love you. You're at the top of my list, cause I'm always thinking.
Well, Karen's dancing.
The song is never too much, right?
Yes, the song is never too much.
I do not know.
Is it Luther Vandross?
It is Luther Vandross.
Oh.
Yes, yes. A perennial pub quiz
answer. Never too much Luther Burgers.
Never too much.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Never too much.
All right, guys. And last one. Here we go.
Love is blind as far as the eye can see. Deep I'm being.
Words to me. He's a lover. I need a friend. Spice Girls.
Also, yes. Too Much.
Too Much.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
A lot of songs just called Too Much.
Yeah, they're more than you might think, or at least more than I might have thought.
You too think many, they're too many?
You might say.
Too much, too much.
Too many, too much. Oh, I see what you did.
All right. Well, good job, guys. Well done. Oh, I get it now. Too much, like too many.
Hey.
Well, that about does it for this episode. Good job, Frank.
Falling apart.
The wheels are coming off.
I need salt for my brain. Yeah. All right. And that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot about too much water, too many carrots.
Mm-hmm. Saying words too much.
Oh, yeah. Saying words too much. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Check out our sponsor, Squarespace. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Oh, quiz.
Yay. Ooh.